Richard. Really enjoyed that. A couple of points of found could see there. The concept of delayed gratification is brought about with the notion of property. Because you talked about harvesting, talked about agricultural society and the growing of food, etc. The other side of the thing I found is that inequality becomes our fate. Right? As you said, it takes on a religious form as well, inequality. The one thing I do find interesting is you didn't talk about a sense of value. You didn't mention it one iota, not at all. You mentioned wealth, but you didn't mention value, right? And that, simply put, came about with the enclosures. When they brought about the enclosures, there actually was put in a value on land, right? And how land could be used and utilized to attain wealth and accumulate wealth. That's all I've got to say. But like I say, very good talk. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Ben. Cheers. Yeah, I mean, value is specifically of interest to us in capitalism. Value only functions fully within a capitalist society because it's based on economic exchange. So, yeah.
Well, I put my own hand up, so I'm going to...
Are you? Sorry, is somebody chairing?
I just sort of stepped in. I put my own hand up because nobody else did, but I just wanted to... I bet you could help out with it. Tell me what this was, actually, Richard. But I remember reading something we were doing at one of our Thursday night sessions ages ago, and one of the things we were reading was pointing out... You know when you mentioned about how in the 18th century sort of attitude to land was it needed to be improved? And we've just been reading something about that, and... I don't know if it was in that Ellen Makesin's Wood book. I don't know if it was that one. But anyway, the point was made that the way that they regard what they meant by improve the land back then was to turn a profit on it. And if you weren't making a profit on it, then that land was basically worthless. Which made me think, well, I suppose they would have described the Garden of Eden as a wasteland in that case. But generally, that was the sort of 18th and 19th century attitude to land. That's what you did with it. You made a profit. And that's why anyone who lived on land and didn't make a profit out of it, like Native Americans, was clearly a waste of space. So that was just to enlarge on the point that you made there. But yeah, thank you for that talk. Now it's over to Andy.
Thank you. And thanks, Richard. That was incredibly well researched. I mean, I know you know, you're such a knowledgeable person anyway, but that was really an impressive talk. I suppose my observation really is very simple. It's just that it's about the language of rights in the current, you know, the current era. We seem to be bombarded by this sort of lawyers, you know, were that, I mean, lawyers sort of propounding this sort of political notion of rights. You know, there's a thing going on at present, isn't there? There's a debate going on amongst the parties in the UK about the European Convention of Human Rights and in relation generally to newcomers to the country and so on, and they wrap that up in the language of of rights and whether we should grant rights to people that come to these islands and so on. But I think back to Maybe 30 years ago, when I first of all came into contact with the Socialist Party of Great Britain, and also some of the prior sort of understandings I had, and was trying to clarify my own thinking at that time. And I used to argue that, quite frankly, there's no such thing as rights. There are privileges which are granted to you. And those privileges can easily be taken away by people who are more powerful than you. There's no such thing as a right within the framework of society that we live in. And capitalism can give you rights. A capitalist state can say, well, you have the right, to clean water, I think you mentioned, and you have the right to be safe. You have the right to, all these nebulous things. Actually, they mean nothing really, because in reality, it's just like, I think, as you said, Richard, it's just like standing on a sandcastle or something, So that's the observation, one of the observations I would take away. Apart from that, I mean, like the rest of it was like quite highfalutin in a way for me on a Friday evening. So I'll have to go back and reread Locke and Hobbes and all the rest of them. So thanks ever so much.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Andy. I'm not sure if I have it here, but I have a really good quote about rights somewhere, if I can find it. And it's from an unlikely source. It's actually from Nietzsche. Okay, so it's in my handwriting, and I can never read my own handwriting, so bear with me. Nietzsche says, "This is thus how rights. This is how rights originate. They are recognized and guaranteed degrees of power. Rights are the historical outcome of struggle. If power relationships undergo any material alteration, rights disappear and new ones are created. That is as is demonstrated by the continual disappearance and reformation of rights between nations. If our power is materially diminished, the something of those who have hitherto guaranteed our rights changes." So sorry, it's a bit awkward, but yeah, it's basically what you're saying, that the rights are given, the rights are fought for, basically. They're generally part of a power struggle in society, and if a power center in society, generally the state, feels that it's a kind of easier to grant a right than to enter the fight with somebody, then they'll do it. And if the if circumstances change, or if people stop fighting for that right so much, and it's convenient for them to withdraw it, then they'll withdraw it. Yeah, I mean, you can call them privileges rather than rights. Yeah, that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, just to quickly just sort of sum up my sort of take on that is that rights can easily just be taken away again. So how can that be a right? It's
Sure.
yeah, it's yeah. So no, thanks ever so much, Richard.
Cheers. God, have I put everyone to sleep?
Oh,
Howard,
Howard's not
hi.
asleep.
For all you know, I have been.
Okay, I'm not going to take any views on that.
That was a tour de force, Richard. Really was. A number of years ago, a book was about 10 years ago now, a book was written called A Radical History of the World, which I actually reviewed for the Socialist Standard. This was heaps better. Covered similar ground in a way. No, just a small point really to do with the transition from hunter gathering to agriculture, you know, from immediate return to what do you call it? Gradual return, can't quite remember term you used.
Delayed.
Sorry, delayed return, that's it, delayed return. Just to sort of point out, it was a messy long-term process, wasn't it? It didn't happen sort of from one moment to the other, and it happened at different times, at different rates in different parts of the world, as sort of, you know, social transition, social and economic transition tends to do. What happens, of course, is that some opponents of our ideas say, well, you know, this is something that was inevitable because it happened absolutely everywhere, sort of quite quickly. Well, it didn't happen. It still hasn't happened everywhere, actually. It didn't happen everywhere quite quickly. It happened quite slowly in different parts of the world for all sorts of different reasons. Just to sort of, you know, give a little bit of detail on that. I mean, I don't know whether you've got a word to say about it, Richard, whether you'd agree.
And also, it didn't actually happen in a unilinear way. I mean, there are people who are hunter-gatherers who developed kind of at least chiefdoms and possibly even state societies who went back to being hunter-gatherers. I mean, there was no single. There is a trend throughout history of movement from one type of society to another. But on any individual society, they can go backwards and forwards. They can go around in circles. They can do anything. There is no kind of single line of evolution, but there is only a trend of evolution for societies towards the societies we've got today. I mean, you couldn't have had a capitalist society with the kind of technology you had among hunter-gatherers or even among medieval people. So there are certain sort of conditions that circumstances that actually require you to move, sort of, you develop a social society in a certain way. But, you know, those conditions can change and, you know, it can go anywhere. It's wrong to think of development of society in a strictly linear way. That was very much a 19th century idea. In fact, I mean, they developed that quite considerably in the 19th century. They thought that there was a single essence of essence of civilization that individual groups of people had, and some people had more of it than others. So, for example, in certain parts of Africa, they had less of it, which is why they remained sort of in tribal societies when the rest of the world was moving on. They didn't sort of kind of point out that the actual geography of Africa is so complicated and the river systems work in such a way that makes transport difficult, so that the development of kind of large-scale trading couldn't happen. You know, but for them, it was an essence within people that actually resulted in the stage of the level of development that they were able to achieve, which of course is all nonsense.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Phaedra next. Phaedra, I'm not sure how you say it. You're muted still, so you need to unmute. Just bottom left of your screen. Yeah, that's it.
I think now my name is pronounced Phaedra. Thanks, Richard, for an excellent talk. I wanted to return to this. You were talking about human rights, and there's been some discussion about the nature of rights. My contribution is that rights are, there are two types of rights. There's absolute rights, which everybody has, regardless of where they are. And if somebody, I think Andrew talked about rights being withdrawn from people who arrive in the country. Well, absolute rights belong to human beings. So an absolute right is a right to life, for example. But the second type is qualified rights. And what you've talked about is the way, when you talked about the, that you said rights only exist if they're enforced. But rights exist when they're breached, if you take that argument to its furthest, whereas rights exist within humans from the outset. So it's when society or capitalism or systems or power systems in breach those rights. I think that's what you were talking about, Richard, but I would like you to clarify do you believe that rights exist but de facto when you're first born, when you're as a human being, or do you solely believe that rights exist when they're enforced? Because enforcement is a proactive action. Not explaining this well, but
it's innate rights. Sorry,
I'm going off my track, but yeah, I just want to clarify about rights. They're absolute or qualified, and qualification is when rights are breached or enforced. But I wonder what others and you thought about that.
I don't believe in inherent rights as an actual entity. Inherent rights are part of the mythology of the whole sort of concept of rights. We have this notion, we put up this notion as part of the mythological structure of rights. There are no inherent rights. Where would you find a right? It doesn't exist in the world. It's, what is it? It's a metaphysical speculation that such a right exists. You're saying that what you're saying is it actually occurs outside of actual human choice. Actually, no, it doesn't. If the human race were eliminated, there would be no such thing as those kind of rights. There would be no, I don't know what the term you actually used, but the idea of inherent rights is part of the structure that we build in order to try and negotiate these issues legally. But it's actually I think the term is fictio juris. It's a juridical fiction in order to kind of enforce or claim to be able to enforce certain positions, certain actions or positions. I'm not quite sure how you would say it. that would be my take on it.
I'll see where I can raise my hand. I don't know if you can still hear me.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can speak there.
Okay, yeah. I disagree with you. That there aren't any inherent rights. The fact that you're a human being, you have rights. What you're talking about is structures that interfere with rights, metaphysical. You're talking about interference from other aspects. But rights exist by the mere fact that you're human.
And you prove that?
Well, I can prove that by the fact that I'm sitting here. I've got a right to speak. I've got a right to breathe.
No, you haven't got a right to speak. Paddy could shut you down at any moment.
Yes. So we're talking about other things that interfere with my rights, but I still have the right to speak, whether Andrew, whether Adam, anybody attempts to talk to prevent me talking, I'm still going to talk.
Okay, but what how can you prove that you have a right to speak?
Well, everybody is talking. That's by de facto. If each of us are talking, we each have a right to speak.
Well, there's a difference between the act of talking and having a right to talk. Those are two quite different things. Well, one is something that I can do as a result of the mechanics of my throat. The other is a social product which actually entitles me to do something. The two things are entirely different. So you can't actually talk about inherent rights except in this kind of juridical way as a means of attaining some particular social end. It's a social construction. The inherent rights are social constructions. They're not actually existent things. I mean, to say that they're existent things would be something like a Platonic idea that, you know, sort of like these are actual cups that exist in the world, and then there is some kind of concept of cup in the world in which they all depend. So to say that rights exist inherently is to say nothing about the actual existence of what actually exists in the world. It's a social construction. It's a social invention.
So you're doing with what you were talking about earlier on in your talk about property and property existing as a social construct rather than a physical thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
Parallel with that. And rights. So you could say that you're saying that rights only exist because you and I say they do.
Yeah, that's right. Same thing. Property and rights in exactly the same way only exist because we say they do. Mm-hmm. They don't have any existence independent of us or independent of our idea that we want them to exist. And so that we kind of posit that they exist. We posit this. We posit the idea of an inherent right. But the inherent right doesn't exist beyond us. It's just a social construct.
We better let Andrew come in because he's had his hand up for quite a long time. So,
sorry, Andrew.
Andy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks. Oh, that was a really interesting interaction. Hello, Phaedra.
Phaedra. Hello, Andrew.
And your friend that's with you there?
Lawrence, my partner.
Lawrence, hello, Lawrence. Hi.
Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
I can assure you we're very friendly. I can't sort of express myself in the way that you can and the way that Richard can, in terms of using it, you know, more kind of slightly academic language and so on. So I use the way I just speak, really. But what I was interested, there was a lot about Richard's talk. I mean, it was really very rich in terms of content and, you know, things to, you know, take from that and to learn from it and to find more out about and so on. But what the one bit that I thought, well, I could make a contribution on this part from it is about, you know, the language of rights. And it's something as a student when I was, I left school with not very many qualifications, and I won't tell you my life story, but I ended up going to university then, or it was a former polytechnic actually, but you know, did sociology and so on. So I learned about some of these theorists that Richard's talked about and so on. Did quite well, got a first, you know, but it was only a former polytechnic anyway. So at that time
I got a Desmond.
At that time, I sort of took an interest in some of this sort of thing, you know, in the language of rights that was going on at that time, because it was 30 something years ago, you know, when I was there, you know, doing it. And not very long after that, I came across the Socialist Party of Great Britain as well, you know, and sort of thought, hey, you know, this makes sense. So all these other left-wing groups that have tried to get me involved, I've been a bit wary of those. But the Socialist Party of Great Britain really made sense to me. But the point is, I mean, I use the term privileges that are granted, really, rather than rights. And I think I'm... essentially, what I'm saying there is pretty similar to what Richard is saying. And Richard might say I'm wrong, but I think that's what I'm saying. You know, the rights are sort of granted to you by some form of essential, like kind of higher, like authority sort of body, a body of authority above. And also the other thing about this is as well, which I find, again, something I would sort of, you know, just learned really in my own sort of head, really, just to sort of think, oh, this doesn't make sense. You know, you've got things like emotive subjects, really, like, you know, the right of the unborn child and things like this. Well, how can an unborn child have a right if it hasn't got the capacity to the mental capacity to exercise that right? Again, it's granted, it's another sort of liberal, I use that word advisedly, but it's sort of a liberal, you know, sort of construct, really, that is nice to have. Of course it is, you know, but and different people have different views on that. You know, I mean, you know, you talk to a feminist about it, they can be really up in arms about it. You talk to my mother about it when, you know, Roman Catholic family, very much in favour of it. So it's, yeah, do you know what I'm trying to say here, yeah?
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so I'll leave it at that.
I don't know whether privilege is the right word, because you're talking, I think that the way I disagree with you and Richard is I think that rights exist by the fear fact that you exist as a human being, whereas you two are talking about rights exist because of a social construct.
Yeah, I don't think that you can say that because you're a human being you've got rights. I just don't think it just is nonsensical to me, to be really honest, because if you're not in a position to exercise those rights, then they don't exist, you know, and they only exist for as long as you're granted them. You know, it's like an external sort of something external to you, you know.
Right, it's not,
and it is really. I'm just sort of wittering a bit now, but no, you know, going back to Richard's sort of point about property, it's an extension of property relations, really. You know, to that degree as well.
I could just my mind just keeps going back very simplistically to like physical experience. So, an unborn or a born child can we can try and claim that each child when it's born has an equality of rights to exist, to breathe, whatever. But as we all know, that life can be snatched away for random physical reasons. So, well, they're not random scientifically, but there's no kind of like, if you try and say, well, everyone's got a right to live, but very sadly, some babies are born still. You know, how can you say that baby had a right to live when actually it's been, when it's born, it's not actually alive? I mean, that's a really brutal example, but I think that shows that there's no inherent physical right. So a right is therefore a concept. It's not a reality.
All right, well, I'm just going to say back to Richard at this stage.
Right? Yeah, where you're talking about, because there's a range of rights, isn't there? There's a range of rights. Rights don't, you're talking about a very limited definition of rights. Some rights are the right to life. That right comes from being somebody being born or unborn. People have different views on that. That is enforced or a social contract. I accept that. It's maintained, enforced, kept alive by a social construct, but it comes from a birth. It comes from an inherent human being. That's the kernel of it. Whereas other rights, the right to marry, for example, that exists with society setting up rules or boundaries about marriage. That's why you have in some countries marriages as young as 14. Marriage can be a union of human beings from when they start puberty. Or in other countries, have legal restrictions. So not all rights have the same. You're talking about a very narrow definition of rights, whereas I'm talking about a range of rights. So some of them start inherently from birth, which are enforced by society or maintained by society, whereas others exist as social constructs, purely as social constructs. Because the right to marry, for example, where does that come from? Doesn't come from a physiological thing.
Yeah, it's conceptual.
It's conceptual. It comes from human beings wanting to join together. Some people say you can only have children if you're married, whereas we all know that you don't need a piece of paper to have children. So that the right to marry is a construct, whereas the right to life comes from being born, surely. So that's what I'm talking about, it being inherent. Maybe inherent is the wrong word. Some of you might like to help give me a better word. But it still comes from a kernel. Some rights come from a kernel, inherent kernel, and some rights come from a social construct. So not all rights are so narrowly defined. That's what I contribute.
I'm too humble to think that I've got a right to life merely by the act of having been born.
Do you? Well, I think that we all have.
Because it's down to chance whether, you know.
Well, now you're qualifying life. Now you're saying that life has some value.
Well, what is the word right then?
So useful. For other people here, for you to tell them what you do for a living.
Me? Sorry, Richard. No, it might not be helpful at all, because Andrew has already mentioned the word.
Okay, well, I need to move over to Dougie. Just before I go to Dougie, I just think it might be worth a little context here, that I think we're possibly arguing slightly at cross purposes, because... Our organisation tends to steer clear of sort of what you might call moral debates. you know, discussions of, you know, what justice means, and that's why we, you know, we struggle with this idea of rights. After all, in other countries there's a right to bear arms. In other countries there's honor killings, the right to stone your wife for adultery. So, you know, it's a very subjective thing what you call a human right, and it varies from country to country and time to time and area to area. So we like to sort of stick to the sort of be a bit more pragmatic and look at the material realities. You know, when Richard says, well, you know, where on your body is the right, you know, where would a surgeon find it? I mean, it's a sort of very pragmatic view, but we do it because it's just the moral arguments are just very difficult to negotiate, and it's very difficult to get agreement that way. So although lots of this, I personally have no problem with the right to life. I think you know, I think that that's, it's fair to say, you know, people should have a right to life. But then I'm a vegetarian, so I think probably a sheep has a right to life as well, so we shouldn't be eating them. But, you know, so there you are. That's what happens when you get into the moral terrain. But sorry, Dougie, I've interposed myself enough, so over to Dougie.
Can I just very briefly say to Peter, I don't think I disagree with what you said last. I think there is a problem of terminology. I think that what you said, both what you describe as an inherent right and what you describe as a social contract, I think that is a valid distinction, but they are both what I would call a social contract. They are just different kinds of social contract. One of them is a purely social invention, like marriage. It's a structure that society has evolved. The other one is a right that has actually been given, and society has decided the conditions under which that right is given, but they are both given by society. So I don't actually disagree with what you just said. I think we're just looking at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, I think we are.
Okay, so over to Dougie.
Yeah, I mean, the right to life is an interesting one. But if you look at what's happening in Gaza, you know, where Palestinians are being killed willy-nilly by Israelis, they don't seem to have the right to life. And I know you say it's when you're born you've got the right to life, but it's how you live your life in the world. And there's lots of places where people are killed willy-nilly, you know, in terrible situations, Sudan and Gaza and things. So it's a construct, the right to life, and it only exists when you don't have violence against the person or whatever. I don't know. I'm just talking about, you know, the world as it is, really, you know. So I don't know. I think all rights are constructs, really, you know, and they can be taken away or they can be ignored, really, you know, by other powers or whatever. Okay.
Thanks, Dougie. Okay, Adam, next.
Yeah, I think the saying might is right is appropriate here. I mean, for instance, well, Richard himself said that a right is something that has to be enforced, and it's enforced, you know, by the state. So if there's a right, you know, not you know, to be alive, that's something enforced by the state. But it works the other way as well. You know, the so-called right to strike is in fact, you know, the might to strike. There are all sorts of things that you know people can, you know can do, and they just do it because they've got the power to do it. And I'm not sure about this idea of saying that, you know, that some of these so-called rights can be you know, taken away by, you know, by the state. In theory they can be, but in you know, in practice they can't. But I mean, even all rights have to be enforced either by the, you know, the power of the people who are asserting them, or by the power of the state. So you know, the might to enforce a right has to exist. So I think it's fair enough to say that in the end, when it boils down to it, you know, it's might is right.
Okay, John, next.
Thanks. Yes, I think following on from what Adam said, might is right, and that's the right that will enable us to overthrow this foul society, and establish a society in which we will be able to accord people such things as human rights. When I hear about human rights, I pretend a sort of fake naivety and say, oh, is that a new thing? I haven't heard of that before, because in most of my life, whether working or elsewhere in society, there's all sorts of petty restrictions that interfere with what I might imagine my rights to be. So although we would like people to have these rights, we know that, as has been said before, rights only exist to the extent that they're exercised, and not just the extent to which people decide to exercise them, but the extent to which they can exercise them. So there'll be external forces in society, essentially the class struggle, but all sorts of other petty enforcements of authority, which will prevent one from exercising the rights that you had imagined you had. So, yes, we probably were talking at cross purposes earlier, in that we are not against the concept of people having these rights. It's just that given present-day society and throughout human history for quite some time, rights have just been something that perhaps the ruling class will use to say that we have these rights, but as soon as you try to exercise them, then they clamp down on you. And the Chinese government is a very good example of representatives of the ruling class who say, of course, Chinese citizens have freedom of thought, but you can't share those thoughts with anyone else. So I'll just leave that thought with you. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, John. Anything you want to come back on, Richard?
No, pretty much agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, just a small bit in regards to the might of right. Like the prime example that's going at this present time is what is occurring in Nepal. You know, the Nepalese, they just turned down and said, right, we've had all this corruption long enough from the state and the ruling class and the capitalist class, etc., etc. Right, it's not going to occur any longer. And they've gone on the streets and they've actually burned down their so-called democracy. Right? They burned the parliament down, right? And they got rid of their prime minister. They have yet to get rid of the monarchy, the so-called monarchy. It's there for all to see that might is right, and that this part, it's actually the reverse of what happened with the Chinese example at Tiananmen Square, right? The working class seen so much happening in Nepal, they decided enough is enough after many, many years, and that's it.
All power to them.
Yes, exactly.
Power to them.
Anybody else got anything to say? I know we've run on a bit longer than we usually do. We usually sort of finish by 9 o'clock, 9:15.
For the newbie disrupting thing.
I've enjoyed the two Scottish accents. Yes. My surname's Scottish, but
I also enjoyed the Welsh accent too.
Oh yeah, lovely.
And the Irish.
Well, you're very welcome. Any other thoughts? Shall we bring things to a close?
Thank you for including us.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Richard.
You're
welcome. Cheers, Lawrence.
Any last thoughts, Richard?
Not really. I think I've said everything I needed to say. I've actually enjoyed the discussion. It gave me a bit of a break. It was good.
Okay. All right, then. Well, we'll say good night and... hope to see everybody again next week. We're doing our regular sort of news round, news discussion. I'm sure Nepal will probably come up, yeah. And various other things. So
I hope it does, buddy.
That'll be next week.
Yeah, but we need a volunteer to introduce it next week, by the way. But we can just take it. Somebody could just say something and take it from there.
I could do that.
You'll do it. Right. Brian is volunteering to do it next week. Okay.
Okay, then.